And this is the Douglas Radio Straight Talk about your dog with fascinating guests. Here on Douglas Radio, you met a lot of interesting people with remarkable skills. But I bet you, this is the first time where you're going to talk and hear with very renowned trainer who me, Vladi, like we say in Russia, I bow to this person when I see him. When the Vladi has problems, sometimes it's happening, you believe it or not, Vladi called to one person. And his name is, I will speak very slowly, Martin Dilley. Martin, welcome to the Douglas Radio.
Oh, it's a pleasure, Vlade. It really is. I love the name Doglish. If only we could all speak Doglish so easily.
This is Doglish Radio.
It is. And this is the biggest problem, I believe. A lot of our clients basically speak in English, but the only language their dogs are speaking is Doglish. And that's mean me and you. And
well, one of the biggest problems I find, you know, when I get a dog in here, they don't even know they're a dog. They're very, very confused. And when I take a dog in for board and train, usually it's by day three, day four, I walk in and say to my wife, I think I've got a dog now. He didn't know what he was before, but now we got a dog. He now can learn. And sometimes, you know, that is the biggest problem. They don't understand the communication is so different between the owners and the dogs. And they get confused, so they don't know what to do.
And for everyone who's just tuning into the Douglas Radio, we're talking with Martin Dilley. He is internationally recognized companion dog and gun dog trainer. He's behavioral consultant, writer, and commentator. He's truly renowned through Europe and America as one of the ultimate authorities on training dogs, but I think both dogs and their owners. And that's what we're just talking right now, Martin. Dogs are not the problem, yes?
That's important.
Write that down.
Well, they can be. Let's be very honest and say this. You know, we have dogs which have got a certain genetic background. You've got protection-type dogs, which basically they've got that in their genes. We've got herding-type dogs. We've got gun-dog-type dogs. And their genetics come to the top in those particular areas that they've got skills. So when we train, what is nice, what we like to do is to be able to, if you like, enhance those skills but also control them. So you have to need to know what a dog is and what its background is and what its character is and what its temperament is, and then we can work with it. And, you know, we change according to the dog. We have to be versatile as a trainer to be able to do that. So whatever I'm training, I'm always looking at trying to bring the best out in the dog and, if you like, reward him by doing some of the things he enjoys doing but in a controlled way.
Exactly. And we're going to talk about the methods, techniques, and all other things, but what you just said makes a lot of sense. In Europe, we believe genetics do matter. In America, sometimes people come up with a statement, well, every puppy is created equally. What you just said, you said, no, not every puppy created equally. A different puppy mm-hmm. comes from some type of the genetic setup. It could be related to the breed, which we call breed traits, but it could be a variety of temperaments. So let's talk about one breed. Your favorite breed, Labrador Retriever.
Well, you know, it was quite fascinating. I moved across to America, what was it now, Vladdy, 16 years ago. And I had Springer Spaniels, Cocker Spaniels, and Labradors in England. Okay. And when I came across here, people said to me, Labradors? How do you control Labradors? They're so hyper. And I went, what? You're having me on. And even though it's a Labrador, I found the British-English style working Labrador was so different from the working American-style Labrador over here. They bred them for what I call more hyper-type. I called them commandos. They wanted them to be really tough kind of dogs. And because of that, they were a little hyper, whereas our English dogs were in the home more laid back, but when you went out in the field, again, switched into a different gear. And you'd never think at times they were the same breed. So you're quite right. I mean, I love the lab. I've got two labs here. In fact, I tell a lie, I've got four labs because two of them are in training with me. And they're just, I find them so easy, it's not true. And a lot of people find them difficult.
You know, Martin. Let's say straight. To me, American labs, they're nuts. It's not just because Russian will never say anything good about Americans.
That's a little bit different. When I was in England, I had a kennels. I never really wanted to take in Rottweilers.
Yeah.
Here, I trained loads of Rottweilers, and I love them to death.
Yeah,
the line of Rottie over here, I found, was nicer than the line of Rottie in England at the time I was there. I think they've, you know, changed a little bit. But it's one of those things that we breed. I always bred for temperament, trainability, and natural ability.
Yes.
And as long as, you know, we were looking for physique, don't get me wrong. We wanted the right physical characteristics and wanted them to be healthy. But we're looking particularly at that. And to me, when I'm picking any dog, probably after saying, are they physically in the right condition? Are they healthy? I'm looking for temperament. Temperament is the most important thing with a dog for it to fit within a family.
I bring the great examples. And those examples, people can relate.
And temperament is one of the three things which would be a recipe for the perfect dog, which is genetics, proper education, and proper nutrition. But back to the lab, I just would like to put my 10 cents, and of course you are the ultimate authority on... But like I said, American labs, they are very hyper. Some of them have a dog ADD. What are we going to do? Not because they're bad. I think they, for some hunters, that's probably one of the best personalities, because you, one of them, have such hyper. It's just not what I like. But we're also English lab, they are more calmer labs. But yep. Now it's much closer to me would be their behavioral traits. In other words, I'm not breedist or colorist or racist, whatever. But to some degree, Martin, the color of the lab is really affecting their personality. Let's say black lab. I haven't seen even one black lab who would be aggressive. Could be hyper, could be jumping through the glass door, not realizing there is a glass door there, but none of them being aggressive. However, if somebody call me and say, well, I have a aggressive Labrador Retriever, I know it's going to be yellow lab. And chocolate lab sometimes have an allergy problem, but the most time is just dumb. So what is
your... Yeah, I mean, you can't generalize like that, Vladdy. I'm sorry, but in my mind, you can't either. Anyway... If anybody's going to say to me, what would you choose, Martin, it's always going to be black, yellow, chocolate. But mainly because in England there weren't many good chocolates. Over here in America, I found a lot of good chocolates because we're bred for them. You know, the dogs that you get are based on the lines that you have. There wasn't many good chocolate lines in England. Over here, there are some good chocolate lines. So it all goes into, as you say, the genetics or the heritage of the dog. The other thing is, you know, that if we know what the temperament is like to some extent, we can actually train to minimize the problems that temperament may bring out. You talk about a hyper or active temperament. One of the things in training hunting dogs for me, or training any dog, I believe, is it's always a balance between the motivation of the dog, what it wants to do and really likes to do, balanced with the control of the dog. So if you're training a dog, let's say as a retriever, you don't give it tennis ball, till it goes berserk, and then you've got no control. You don't put so much control on it that it doesn't want to fetch a tennis ball. So you're always balancing out the two and watching your dog and reading it accordingly, because every dog is different. So you can change temperament. You can teach it to be calm in the house and to be a worker outside. Most people play with the dog in the house, take it out for a pee and a poop and a little bit of a walk, and bring it back in the house and then play. And they wonder why it's playing in the house all the time and hyper.
If you lost common sense in relationship with your dog, I will bring that common sense back to you. Am I right, Mika? Good girl!
So, you know, you can change things with training and doing the right things, putting the right guidelines in, setting the right boundaries, the right limitations, and then building a relationship up with your dog that he understands what good habits are what you will accept.
And we are with Martin Dealey. Martin Dealey also acted as a consultant and contributor to his friend, and our friend, and my friend, Cesar Millan. And I know you did some, you helped him with his new book, Training Cesar's Rules. And also you are contributing regularly to the Cesar Millan website, Cesar's Rules. Martin Dealey is the president of International Association of Canine Professionals. So if you tune in to the Douglas Radio, you're talking to the man.
I bring the great examples.
And here's what we're going to do, Martin. Normally I tell the people, I'm trying to put you through the test. There is no test for Martin Dealey. Martin Dealey will win everything. But a lot of people wants to talk to you. And I'm receiving texts, Facebook, Twitter, everything is hot right now. So we're going to go for the break right now. And we come back. You will hear Martin Dealey's addressing real questions with the real answers. Don't mess it up. This is the Douglas Radio.
Don't go away. More Douglas Radio when we come back.
I love this music. Martin, welcome back to the Douglas Radio. And like I mentioned, there is many people would love to talk to you and run by you some of their behavior problems, their pets. So let's go. Mr. Producer, we have three lions. Both of them right now is flashing. Let's go to lion two. Hey, who is this?
Hi, my name is Marnie.
Hi, Marnie. Please, are you from cellar phone? You speaking on cellar phone?
Yes, I'm on a cell phone.
Yeah, please stay. Do not move. So we would hear you well. Okay, Marnie.
Okay.
Marnie, you're lucky enough to talk to the world-famous dog trainer, Martin Dealey. Please run by him your question. What is your dog's problem?
My dog is very aggressive. Aggressive towards other dogs, and basically wants to kill other dogs. Like, I'll be walking her, and she'll try to bite them, attack them. I don't know what to do.
Hi, Marnie. You know, it's very difficult when you talk about aggression to actually give you a straight answer, much as I would like to. I'm not a politician, by the way, and I'd like to give you a straight answer. But without seeing it and seeing what creates it, what causes it, it's very, very difficult to know. Tell me, what breed of dog is it?
She's a boxer.
A boxer. Now, that's unusual with boxers. Boxers are usually want to play more than anything else. Was she very nervous as a young puppy?
No, she wasn't. When we first got her, she was, like at the breeders. But when we got her home, she's amazing.
So she was never nervous as a young dog. And what age is she now?
No.
About a year to 18 months?
She is 10 months.
Okay. What you will find out with some of these dogs, if there's a slight touch of dominance there, and it varies in my experience between the kind of sizes of dogs. If you've got a little dog, you tend to find they get their Levi jeans and their miniskirts and start to take over the world at about 7 months to 9 months. With the medium-sized dogs, like your boxer and so forth, it tends to be between 9 months and probably 14, 15 months. And then when you get up to the big Great Danes, it might be about 2 years before they start to show any kind of dominance. I don't know why it is, but that's just been my experience. And unless you've set clear guidelines, clear boundaries, clear leadership with the dog, and they've got confidence in you, then sometimes they feel as though they have to take over. And it's very difficult then to actually control them, for the simple reason being that you get nervous about it. You get worried about it. The dog smells your nervousness, smells your concern, and the next minute thinks, I've got to take over here simply because Mum is frightened of this. Sometimes it's because they've been attacked by other dogs, and they'll even be specific about the dog that they will actually lunge at. It might be a certain breed they will lunge at. So it's very difficult to know without seeing it. But one of the things that I do find is that there are certain tools that can help you, and there are certain ways that can help you. The first thing is to try and avoid situations where you're getting close and you can't control your dog. In other words, you desensitize it to other dogs in the situations from afar, from a distance. The moment you see an interest, you redirect, you turn around, you go the other way, you move away. You do something which will catch her attention so that she watches you.
That's important.
Write that down.
And then you can gradually build up. You don't go into a dog park and hope that it will be okay. You don't go walking up to another dog, sit them next, and let that dog walk past. Because when they're sitting, they can build up their intensity, and we don't want that. We want their mind to be thinking about two or three different things, so it's not focused on the one thing, which is to lunge.
Take notes.
And the other thing that I found with dogs, and it's difficult with a boxer because their nose, unless you've got a boxer with a longer nose, I often like to use like a head halter of some nature because I can control the nose, I control the mouth, and I can actually take control of a bigger dog with less effort, and I can lead them away and I can guide them. What I would suggest is if you go to Canine Professionals, C-N-I-N-E, professionals.com, and at the top right, you'll see Find a Professional. Click on that and then put in your zip code and a distance like 25 miles and ask for someone in your area there and have a little look. It's all part of my organization or our organization of the members there. There's 1,300 of them. And you might find a trainer very, very close to you that can come and help you.
This portion of Dog Talk Radio is brought to you by SoCal Dog Training. Does your dog take you for a walk? Do they bark nonstop? How about chewing your belongings? Totally disregard your authority and shame you in public? Vladdy, the Russian dog wizard, can transform any notorious canine into a well-mannered pooch. He can fly to your home even if you live miles away. Vladdy trains even the untrainable. Visit SoCalDogTraining.com to learn about Vladdy's unique dog training method or call him at 949-244-0615. Your dog isn't bad and it's not your fault. You just need Vlad.
You've got to be, you know, you've got to look at aggression because it can be caused by so many things, my love, and you can make mistakes so easy, and the last thing we want is mistakes.
She's not aggressive when we go to, like, the dog park. It's more when she's on a leash.
Ah. Now, that's an interesting one because you do get that with some dogs. You get the dogs which you let off the leash and they're okay, but on the leash they are. And that is what we call going down the leash. Because in the past, when the dog has pulled towards other dogs and they've been happy and their tail's been going, but you thought it was something that was a bit threatening, you've pulled them back, you've got concerned, and the next minute they're thinking that that's what they've got to do. We call it the aggression goes down the leash because of your nervousness on the other end of it. And it, again, I would say get yourself a little trainer, a good trainer who's got experience of this just to show you how to handle it. It's important that you're shown what to do, my dear.
Marnie, dog aggression, unless any other behavior problems, must be dealt with someone who has experience. This is not the one behavior problem you want to do on your own, okay?
Okay.
The best advice is go and International Association of Canine Professional. International Association of Canine Professional. You can Google it. You can put your zip code. And you can see, like Martin D. listed, within 25 miles, whatever trainer's going to come in, all of them are good. It's the balanced philosophy, balanced mentality. Thank you so much. And Martin, I love that idea about the nose, big nose, small nose, because one of the things what I do, I basically drive the dogs who are a little bit fearful or aggressive to another dog. I want to make sure that dog will sniff another dog's butt first. You know, sniffing the butts is so important for the dogs because it's like almost like a Googling for information. And if you allow your dog be sniffed first, that's maybe the problem. So get the halter, get the trainer, and, you know. And
I think one of the biggest problems, though, you know, sometimes is that you've got a dog that you're worried about that might snap at another dog, and other people come out and let their dogs come all the way around them.
Exactly.
And, you know, I mean, let's face it, if I came up to your wife, who I've never met, and hugged her in the middle of the street and kissed her, and she'd never seen me before, she'd have the police on me. But yet we let dogs mug other dogs and say nothing.
Do you hear that?
Each person has to realize that the other dog coming towards them may not be always friendly or may be nervous and concerned, and we have to be respectful. And, you know, it would be rather nice to have that kind of responsibility among dog owners that we only let them sniff butts when we allow them to.
Exactly. Thank you so much. Thank you, Marnie.
thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right, Marnie.
This is the Douglas Radio.
I don't know what you want. What?
Need a translation.
Hey, that's enough. Come on, knock it off.
You've come to the right place. This is Douglas Radio.
This is the Douglas Radio, and it's my ultimate happiness and pride and honor to talk to the Martin Dealey, president of International Association of Canine Professionals today.
I'm not the president. Hold on there. Bloody, I'm executive director.
Yeah.
My mate Chad Mackin is the president, and Chad's a great guy, too, a good trainer.
Yes. Sorry.
No problem,
for this,
my friend.
But, you know, you are the godfather for that organization.
So they tell me.
You're the one who established that organization. You know, we talk about a lot of things today, and here's what I would like to do right now to talk about. I will speak very slowly. I would like to talk about dog training methods, techniques, and after we're going to get at least another caller. I know you're very busy, but we have so many people wants to talk to you, so we're going to pick one another lucky person to talk to you. For the last...
What?
Here's what I...
What?
Here's my...
What?
Here's my...
What? What?
My opinion about what's happening, or my question.
What?
Whatever you call it.
What?
Maybe for the last 10-15 years, philosophy in the dog training radically changed. From over-punishment, we moved to over-indulging. You know, and somebody, from my understanding, forgot to push the brake. Those people talk about motivational training as the only way something the dog needs to get. To me, motivational training is both something dogs wants to get and something dogs wants to avoid. It's like me. You see, if I see beautiful lady, I maybe wants to come and I wish my wife, you know, is not hearing that. But, you know, I want to avoid some problems.
I bring the great examples.
So this is driving through any, I would say, this philosophy goes through anything in conjunction with the dog as well. There are creatures with this almost the same, similar to the humans to some degree. What is your opinion about dog training philosophy, and where is the bottom line?
Got a question? Call Vladdy.
Well, you know, Vladdy, I think it's a small percentage that still go, if you like, for the what they call the punishment training, and a very small percentage that really go for the total positive. In between there, you've got a huge, and I mean a huge majority of people who want to learn every approach, every technique, every piece of equipment to do the best they can for dogs and their owners. And it's always the case, this world at the moment is full of minority groups that we're listening to rather than the majority. And it's sad because they have a big voice for a small group. We should listen, don't get me wrong. But unfortunately, many times the media and even ourselves, we actually seem to select them to talk about, and it brings them to attention. All I do know is that of the societies, the organizations that are involved with dog trainers and dog training, I would put money on the fact that 85% of all those people are basically what I would call versatile, balanced trainers today. I think the positive movement helped in that it moved some of the more military-style training that people thought they had to do with their dogs to a more, if you like, paternal, if that's the word, type of training, a more positive type of training. But, I mean, I've been training for 40 years, and this was England I started in, and I can't remember what I call harsh training. Yes, there was the occasional correction, but I was training mainly hunting dogs, I suppose, and a lot of that was based on motivation, reward training. It wasn't food. It was actually on retrieving something or going shooting and finding game and things like that. So we were rewarding, and a lot of what I did and my first books that I wrote were based on how to reward. Everything has its problems. You correct a dog too much, it closes down on you. You reward them and keep saying good and giving them jackpots, and you know what? They think good means be silly. some of the dogs, when I say good to them, break everything that they're doing, jump up and down, go silly, because they think it's a release word.
Your dog is not that. You just need Vlad.
So there's got to be a balance there all the time, and I've had quite a few dogs with serious issues that have been only what I would call food trained, and they've had no kind of repercussions of either good or bad that they can understand, which makes them into the kind of dog the owner wanted. So there's good and bad in both sides, and I'm always one for looking at versatility to get the best out of the dog based on that dog and that owner, what they require.
So the solution is common sense, but as we all now know, common sense becoming very uncommon nowadays, we see in a lot of countries, and the UK, and the New Zealand, and Australia, keep forbidding all different dog training equipment. And I have a trainer calling me on this radio from UK, New Zealand, and tell me literally, because this is show running globally, and
yeah.
They say, well, Vladi, please keep us away from trouble. Even using sleep collar in UK nowadays, it's almost like a crime. So
yeah, what interests me is that with my clients, I mean, I'm a big lover of a chain slip collar. I use slip rope leashes as well. I'll use anything. I'm going to be honest with you. I'll use electronic collars. I'll use brown collars. I'll use everything. It depends on the dog.
You're listening to the Russian Dog Wizard Radio Show.
Now, get a slip chain, put it around your leg, or put it around your arm and snap it. And you will find that the pressure goes all the way around your arm, and basically the only thing you feel often is the ring slapping on the side of your arm. And that's all we're trying to do with the dog. It acts like a communication. It acts like the reins of a horse, where the horse starts to just feel the weight move.
That's important.
Write that down.
And that's what I want this dog to do. I don't want, actually, by the time I've finished, anyone to see the leash move hardly, but the dog is feeling it underneath. And it's the weight, it's the movement, it's the action. Flat collars, everybody likes flat collars. You put a flat collar on your arm and just pull it back like you might do with a dog, and the pressure is all in one specific small area. And to me, that is more pressure than having something like a slip collar. We call them choke chains, you know, but they don't choke if you use them correctly. The thing is education, my friend.
What?
Thing is education.
What?
And what I get a little bit, let's say, irritated about is the people who throw guilt at others who use different kinds of tools without finding out how to use them, whether they're being used correctly. And there shouldn't be guilt. I don't like, my owners come in here and they feel guilty about using a prong collar or a choke chain or a gentle leader, a head halter, whatever it is. And I say, but why? Does it work? And they say, well, yes, it is doing. And I say, well, why do you feel guilty? Oh, well, my neighbor doesn't like it. Or someone stopped me in the street and said, how dare you use that kind of thing? And even in some of the supermarkets, one lady said to me, I took this to the counter, and the girl on the counter who was selling it told me that I shouldn't use it, it was cruel. But they were selling it. We're all very sensitive people, and to throw guilt in that way.
We could detonate that dog remotely.
And particularly when you love your dog. These people come in and spend a lot of money with me because they love their dog and want a good companion in their family. They're not out to abuse them, and I find that everybody that comes to me, they're not out to abuse their dog. They're out to help their dog and have a lifetime together.
And, you know, we're talking about a very controversial subject right now, and I would like to make it even more controversial to talk about electronic collars. And I know you are the one who invented the remarkable dog training method. It's called e-touch, yes? could you very quickly tell us about what is this method is about?
Yeah. I mean, when I first started to look at e-collars, 17 years ago, I thought, oh, no, I couldn't use that. And then I was taken to an expert at that time over in California who showed me a few things, and I was given a unit, and I came back and I started to play with it. And I started to find that instead of using it as a correction tool, I was using it, I'm going to say like an invisible leash, but not in a harsh type of way at all. I was using it to catch the dog's attention. I was using it to get the dog to look at me. I was getting it to give what I call a positive distraction. so that if he was looking at a squirrel or a cat and you just tapped him, he'd look back at you and say, sorry, did you do that? What do you want? I call it splitting the mind.
This.
It's like people are listening to this program now. Someone comes and taps them on the shoulder, and they may have been focused on this program, but now all of a sudden their focus is split.
This.
It's two ways, and whoever gets that attention now will actually have their focus on them.
This is Doglish Radio.
I use it with the dogs in many different ways. It's a communicator. It's a way to help to talk to the dog, and it's a great way to talk to the dog when they are off-leash. Because I can just tap them, they look at me, and I can say, here, leave it, come on, follow me, whatever I want to do. I've taught those commands separately in most of the cases. I've taught those commands separately, and then I'm using it just to catch their attention so that then it's more reinforced with them. It's more, if you like, obvious with them what I want. Yes, it can be used as a correction, but I tend to find most of the time when I'm working it with the dogs, it just is a nice progression to actually communicating and helping them off-leash. And to be honest, when they come out with me, they put their head forward to put their necklace on. I say, put your necklace on, and they put the e-collar on, and off we go, and they're as happy as the day is long because they know we're going to do things they're going to enjoy.
Yeah, I believe it. I really do. It's a great pleasure, Martin Dilley. And here's what we're going to do. We're going to go for the break, and we have a caller who's already waiting to ask you a question about her own dog, and just you don't want to miss this. This is the Doglish Radio.
You're listening to Doglish Radio with Vladdy, the Russian dog wizard. Doglish Radio.
And we are with Martin Dilley, which is internationally recognized companion dog and gun dog trainer. Martin recently released, it's called Working Gun Dogs, which is now a best-selling book, which he's recently revised and released and include new aspects and approaches to the training and gun dog. Martin, where do people can buy that book?
Well, if they go to martindealey.com,
write that down.
You can buy it through there, which is one of my websites. But certainly you can get it through Amazon as well. In fact, I was very honored because Caesar wrote the foreword to the revised book. He actually said I was a lot older than him, which was a bit hurtful. But apart from that, he said some very nice things, too.
He's a great guy. I love him.
Yeah, but I wrote that. Oh, my goodness. Now I'm talking about when I was a boy. I probably wrote that way back in the 1990s. And then after being in America and working a lot with American trainers here and developing further myself, I added another 30,000 words to the book that I'd written way, way back. And people tell me, it's got color photographs in it now as well. People tell me it's a great book for starting your dog and working with your dog for the field. But a lot of people tell me it's very good also for the owner companion dog, a lot of good points in there. Yep. And you know what, Vladdy? I have little dogs that come in here. I've had little Dachshunds and Poodles and right their way up to Mastiffs. And if I can get them to retrieve, they love that as a reward. And you can put it to many of the kind of obedience and good behavior kind of training you want. And
yeah.
They love it. They love it.
If you can teach the Dachshund to retrieve, or, you know, you can probably teach any dog to come. That's for sure.
Give it a try at BBS Radio.
And we have so many callers, so many people want to talk to you. Doug, this is my producer. Doug, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Are you sleeping there? You having vodka? You have too much fun today?
Yes.
What's going on? You're not working well today. Get disciplined a little bit. Otherwise, Martin Dilley will correct you too. Get for us the caller, please. Yes, who is this?
Hello?
Yes, who is this?
Hi.
What is your name?
Hi, it's Karen.
Hi, Karen. How are you?
I am good. How are you?
Good, 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 Karen. Karen, do you have some question to the Martin Dealey?
Yeah, I have two questions. The first one, I have a Sharpei who I've had her since she was 7 months old.
Hold on one second. Doc, could you hang up this line?
What?
We're talking about Sharpeis here.
What?
I'm kidding, Karen. Go ahead.
Anyway, she barks at everything. If a leaf blows in front of the window, she'll bark. If the light on the timer comes on, which it comes on every night, she barks.
Okay,
so I don't know what to do with her.
Okay. And what is
you on a speakerphone, Karen?
No, I'm on a Bluetooth.
It's a big echo for me, but I think I've got it right. So when the timer goes off, she barks. When people go by the window, she barks.
Oh, yeah, she barks at everything. Barks at anything and everything.
Well, one of the things you tend to find sometimes is that they do it for negative attention. Sometimes what will happen is that they find that they get your attention, and you going, shh, or that's enough, or quiet, is basically they're hearing, good, I like this. Or if you get upset with them, you're just joining in. Sometimes, of course, when they're at the window and the postman comes or the UPS man comes, they bark and the postman goes away. So, wow, here I am, a protection dog, and I've just done it. I've seen dogs which will actually bark at the slightest thing, like a toaster going off and stuff like that. But they've actually been taught it. It's kind of spooked them. They've barked, and the owner's done something, and then all of a sudden they found it's the right thing to do, or they feel it's the right thing to do. When this kind of thing happens, it sounds silly, but sometimes I will I had a dog in training once, not in training, I went to people's house, and they said, oh, she runs along the settee, sits at the end of the settee, and barks at the window. She can just see over the windowsill there. And I said, let's move the settee. And they went, oh, didn't think of that. We moved the settee, she couldn't see, she didn't bark. You know, sometimes we find that we allow them to do things. We can control them by putting them in a more controlled environment, a situation to stop them. Sometimes, of course, we have to do things which maybe just kind of split their mind from it. And one of the things that I will sometimes do, I've used Coke cans with pebbles in them and stuff like that, but many times I'll have like a little pile of paperbacks around. And the moment they go rushing to the window and they start to bark, a paperback flies across the room, lands next to them, and slithers against them. So what we're doing is breaking their concentration, breaking their focus. In fact, my mate Vlade, the Russian wizard, you may have heard about him.
Vlade, the Russian dog wizard.
He has something, and he'll tell you what it's called now. I think is it called the Pet Defender? The Pet Convincer. And all it is air. And it's great for things like this because it gives a little kind of high-pitched hiss of air, very sharp. And the moment they bark, you just squirt it, and they go, whoa, what's that?
That's important.
Write that down.
So very much they find, like, touching a stove, yes, it's hot, bark, oh, there's that funny noise, I didn't like that too much. And very quickly you can break them out of some of these habits. It's a matter of actually breaking the habit or controlling her so that she doesn't do it.
Okay, yeah, because she, when you said the toaster, I had to laugh, because if my toaster goes off, she barks and she runs. It scares the heck out of her.
Yeah, well, it may scare the hell out of her, but it may also that she's found it gets a response also. Now, what you can do is sometimes desensitize them to that. So someone in the other room has her on a leash, sits on the settee, and you let the toaster go off a few times. You then bring them a little closer. You let the toaster go off a few times. You bring them a little. Desensitization isn't taking them in and flooding them with the kind of noise all the time, because that can make them even worse. It's a matter of doing it in the background. In fact, one of the things I would do probably is get the toaster to go off, tape it, and then repeat the tape, repeat the tape, repeat the tape, till you've got it a few times, and then in another room set it off so that it's going, and she'll just get familiar with the noise in the background. It may not be exactly the same, but there's lots of things you can do to help desensitize this dog to it.
I bring the great examples.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Karen, I hate to tell you, but we have to go, so we'll call maybe next time.
Good, because I have another question, so I just have to wait.
I know. But thank you so
much.
I do have
one quick question. Where can I get that pet convincer at?
The pet convincer straight from my friend here, the Russian dog wizard. He's the man who invented it.
Or you can type pet convincer on the Google. It's going to come up with many, many trainers, and many of them from International Association of Canine Professionals. By the way, they're carrying that items. And any stores, maybe in your local store having, yes. But, it's a very nice device. Thank you
so
much,
Kara. It's a
very
easy, humane device.
Thank you.
Thank you. Martin, it was ultimate pleasure for us to talk to you today. Thank you so much for your time. If anyone have a problem pet or you want to train dogs for being a perfect hunting dog, or you would like to become trainer, or you would like to, if you are the trainer and you would like to enhance your skills, Martin Dealy does so many things. He's providing so many seminars and training seminars and teaching. He's the trainer's trainer, not just the pet owner's trainer. He's the best of the best. You can reach him at floridadogtrainer.com. Martin, thank you so much for your time. And being
It's my pleasure, Vlade. I give my love to California.
Yes, I love you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, my friend.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
And this is the Douglas Radio. We have a wonderful things is coming up. Stay tuned.
People speak English, Spanish, or any other human language. The man about to meet speaks English.
We've never met anyone who claims to be able to talk to a dog.
That is until we met an unusual dog trainer named Vlad.
The Russian dog wizard is on the air.
Douglas Radio, and this is the Vladdy. I truly enjoy the show today. I had so many interesting people, and right now I have a straight connection with Australia. Steve Austin, friend of Douglas Radio, and he's right now on the Skype with me, and we're going to together try to help the real callers. If you will call us right now, the phone number is through douglasradio.com. I cannot give you exact phone number at this point. This is the KGB secret, but you can locate us as the Douglas Radio Facebook. There is all information is there. There is a many way you can contact us. We have a few lines I see is already flashing so that people really can find us. But first of all, Stephen, are you there?
I am, Vlad. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning. What is the time right now in Australia?
The time is 5 a.m. in the morning on a Sunday morning.
Well, thank you so much for taking your time and talking to me. I cannot function in the morning. I don't know how you can do this, but look, Stephen is one of the very best dog trainer in Australia, and some considering him the best of the best there. He've got so much experience, not just working with regular pets and the regular clients. He's done a lot of work for government. Yes, Stephen?
That's correct. Yeah, mostly, started off with explosive narcotic dogs, obviously, for many years, and quarantine dogs. Now doing a lot of conservation work with my dogs, Vlad, traveling all over Australia. I was in Uluru, which is right in the middle of Australia, Central Australia, working for the Northern Territory Parks and Wildlife all last week in 42 and 43 degrees heat with my dog. So we had a very, very hard time, but was successful, so all is good.
Yes, and you did some training dogs for movie, and you did many other interesting things in your life. And after that, such a great experience, I'm sure you will be able to help my callers to, you know, deal with their behavior problems, with their pets' behavior problems. And I would like you to talk to some of them right now. So, producer, Mr. Producer?
Yes.
who we have right now. Let's go to the line number one. Hi, who's this?
This Hello. Is Bob Ringman.
Hi, Bob. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
Wonderful. Such a wonderful, clear hearing, as a matter of fact. Where are you calling us? From what city?
Long Beach, California.
That is why it's from California, and our studio located in California. That's why probably such a clear hearing. But, Bob, could you please let us know what is your dog's behavior problem? And just tell us what your dog breed is, where did you get that, you raise it, you adopted it, and what is the problem is?
She's about 1.5 years old, maybe two. We picked her up from a German Shepherd rescue. She's a 38-pound, maybe Australian Shepherd, maybe a little bit of Border Collie in her. Mm-hmm. She has a really high prey drive, you know, with cats. I mean, she knows when they're here with her toys, her ball, and everything. The two things we do have an issue with is when my son tries to take, like, a leash off of her, to put her in the crate train, and she's very well crate trained, she will sometimes kind of turn and not so much bite him, but she can feel, he can feel, you know, her teeth. She hasn't broken skin or anything yet, but he can, you know, feel her teeth on there, and she just kind of like turns on him, and like when she's like in a bad mood or she seems like she's in a bad mood, she'll do that to him.
How old is your son, Bob?
He is 23.
Okay. Okay. And he, does he live in your house?
Yeah, he lives here in the house, so she sees him, you know, every day.
Okay.
And she's also very skitterish when she's in with a group. We had her at a park a couple weeks ago for some training, and, you know, she just kind of whimpered and the whole time, and we took her out and took her to my parents the other night, and she just kind of wouldn't calm down and lay down. She was just really highly active. But it's the turning and the nipping is what we really don't like.
Okay. Steven, Bob is yours. Go ahead. Ask whatever you want to ask.
Okay, Bob. Bob, you probably got a border collie who's very, obviously to me, first of all, it's very difficult for me to give you an exact answer because I'm in Sydney, Australia, and you're in wonderful USA because I haven't seen your dog. But just generally, these are the things that I would concentrate on. First of all, I would concentrate on building the dog's confidence of that crate. I would feed her in the crate. I'd make the crate a very pleasant thing. I certainly wouldn't, in no way, force her into the crate at this level. So I would make the crate a very easy place to go to, a safe and secure place. That's the first instance. But in the more important instance, the dog to me is not a confident animal because of the way that he doesn't like to go in enclosed areas. It feels unsafe. In some previous situations, probably had a bad experience. So I would do some very, very counter conditioning around the crate, make the crate and the crate area a good place, play with it, feed it, and gradually, with small steps, increase the area, decrease the area from where the dog is from the crate and get the dog into the crate, but don't force it in. That's critical. The second thing I do is building up the dog's confidence. And one way you can do this is make it earn everything you give it. Do not give your dog any free rewards ever. It must come to you to get rewarded. It must sit and be told to sit and stay before it gets in and out of the car. It must, and one thing that I do that I find very successful, I don't feed the dog for 2 or 3 weeks by the bowl of food. I make it earn its food over an hour or two or three, depending on your time frame. So in essence, Bob, what I would do is I'd get the dog to become, to clearly understand that you're in control, and the more success you give your dog, the more confident that dog will feel. And that's just a couple of points that I would do first, Bob.
Okay, great.
You're listening to Doglish Radio with Vladdy the Russian Dog Wizard. Doglish Radio.
Bob, if you have do you have any other question to ask him in particular, like details? Go ahead.
No, basically, those are the two that we're just struggling with right now. If she walks fine, she does go into the crate well. We don't force her in. We tell her to go in the crate, and she's fine. It's just taking a leash off of her that she doesn't like, you know, from Kevin. but she's doing so much better. It's just that these two issues we have right now, especially, you know, and maybe her confidence is also an issue with her being out in public as well. So how would we handle that?
And I also would like to ask you, Stephen, also about the cat dogs. You see, to me, cats, and if the dog hasn't been raised with the cat, it's very hard for the dog to be good with the cat. And I don't know, you tell me too, but in my practice, even if the dog is raised with a cat, the dog can be good with that cat she raised or he raised, but can kill neighbor's cat. So to me, cats and dogs needs to live like United States and Russia, means no friends, no enemies. I would like to ask your intake, how to help them, because I see for them it's important. So go ahead, Stephen.
Yes, Bob, in answer to your question, does the leash come when you take the leash off the dog? Is it near the crate when your son takes it off or anywhere else?
It's usually near the crate, right at the opening of the crate before she goes in.
Okay, well, that's important. Don't have the leash. Don't even attempt to take the leash off anywhere near it and reward the dog closer and closer to it. As far as the cat is concerned, I agree entirely with Vlad. Dogs and cats can get on well together, no problem, especially if they're brought up. The problem you might have, Bob, is that we don't know what's happened to the dog beforehand, before you got him, her. If the dog has had an experience with a cat, either a good couple of chases or a kill, it's going to be very difficult to turn that dog back over to living with a cat. So my answer sometimes is to be extremely practical. Keep the dog on the leash or long leash when you come into an area where you might see a cat, and see how the dog goes when it's more under control and much more obedient.
Okay.
Yes, I really, really agree with you, because there is two choices, Bob. Or we always can try to make it work. And in order to make it work, we need to somehow create binding between those two creatures. And it's, to some degree, not easy things to do. But the way you can create that bonding, if they would sleep in the same area, if they would eat at the same time, and one would get positive perception when another one is around. And you can do it by, for instance, feeding them at the same time, one in the crate, second maybe, you know, cat maybe somewhere higher, maybe on the table, and if maybe give to the cat something really delicious with the cat. If you're not giving her canned food, maybe start to give the canned food in that time, just when she's tolerating, you know, the dog being around in the crate. Because the reason the cat, see, you cannot, I guess you can, but look, you cannot stop the cat from running from the dog. The only way cat is running from the dog, because the dog is chasing the cat. So if you will confine dog first and start to, now the dog is not chasing the cat, and you start to make sure the cat was tolerating the dog by feeding it. And then sometimes, Stephen, I even put a cat in the little travel crate too, at least make sure they're tolerating each other, maybe far from each other.
I agree.
Yeah, but at the worst case scenario, no matter what you do, and if the dog still wants to chase the cat, there is no way, Bob. You have to correct that dog. And you can correct them remotely from all different type of remote communicative devices, remote corrections, or you can correct them with a device by name Pet Convincer, which emits spray of the air. You can do whatever you want, but if something, after you've done everything and your dog still shows unhealthy interest to the cat, you know, you have to step in. You know, that's no other way to go around. Or you avoid it, or you build it, and you deal with the situation. Okay?
Okay.
Thank you so much for calling us.
Yes, thank you. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Bob.
And this is the Douglas Radio, and I'm right now with a big friend of Douglas Radio, Stephen from Australia. Stephen, we talk on Douglas Radio about many interesting things, and some of them dog training techniques, methods. There is a many methods nowadays. Sometimes people using Some tools, sometimes don't. People fight with each other. Sometimes it's nasty. What is your belief is? If you would say from your heart.
Yeah. Vlad, I know exactly what you're saying, and we have the same thing here. Do you know, the purpose, the responsibility that we have, that's you and I as professional trainers, is to make a dog achieve with our dogs a happy relationship with its owner. And I believe strongly that we should not be restricted on using tools that make us, that make you and I be able to do that. Because if you're a mechanic and you can't use a spanner or you can't use a ring spanner, you can only use a hammer or whatever, you're not going to be able to get the job done. So my view is very simple. I use as many tools as I possibly can to have a successful outcome so that dog and that owner of the dog have a real strong, happy relationship together. Because if I'm restricted on using some tools, some dogs end, well, a lot of dogs can end up in welfare organisations and get put to sleep. And I think it's very wrong and almost very arrogant not to be able to use the tools that are going to best help our dogs and help our owners. I believe strongly in using a positive motivation in training dogs, absolutely. But I don't want to be restricted by laws or regulations that I can't use particular tools, because sometimes you have to, as you know, you have to be very calm, very soft, and sometimes, Vlad, you have to be firmer and very clear in what you want to achieve. So this, I like to use as many tools as I possibly can so that my relationship with my clients, dogs, and myself are always strong.
But when and where that anger comes in, when the people lost that common sense, why the people on that radical way of thinking who believes just the positive reinforcement works and the rest of them does, why they are attacking training?
Well, look, I think a lot of it goes to because people in the past were too aggressive with dogs, way too aggressive. And training methods were very, very wrong. They were very hard training aggressive methods, and the dogs were suffered. They used to walk around and be trained, and you could see the dogs. They had no spirit. They had no drive. They were very miserable, for want of a better word. And I think it's kind of gone the full circle. But in some, like I said earlier, I think a lot of people don't come into contact with a lot of different types of dogs. Now, you and I, as professional trainers, we come across dogs of all the spectrum, from the very soft, food-orientated golden retriever to the very hard drive, working Malinois. And a good trainer trains many different dogs to do many different aspects. And with that in mind, I think you've got to have the tools. But a lot of trainers that I meet that always talk only about positive reinforcement and nothing else tend to have very soft dogs and don't train a lot of different dogs. I think that's where it comes from, Vlad.
People speak English, Spanish, or any other human language. The man you're about to meet speaks Doglish.
We'd never met anyone who claimed to be able to talk to a dog. That is until we met an unusual dog trainer named Vlad.
The Russian Dog Wizard is on the air.